Podcastle, episode 506 for January 23rd, 2018. La Gorda and the City of Silver by Sabrina Borbulias. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Podcastle. I'm your host, Setsu Uzume. Today's story has my kind of hero, and I hope you'll agree. La Gorda and the City of Silver was written by Sabrina Borbulias. Sabrina Borbulias is the author of Ink, which was released by Cross Genres in 2012. This novel draws on her memories of Guatemala's armed internal conflict and of the Latinx experience in the United States. It was named to Latinidad's Best Books of 2012. Her short stories have appeared at Uncanny Magazine, Tor.com, Strange Horizons, Crossed Genres, and in a number of anthologies, including long-hidden speculative fiction from the margins of history, the year's best young adult speculative fiction 2015, and Latina Rising. She is also a freelance op-ed columnist whose commentaries have appeared at Philly.com, Philadelphia Weekly, Philadelphia Magazine, City and State Pennsylvania, and The Guardian US, among others. She lives in Pennsylvania with her husband, daughter, and a dog who rules the household. Follow her on Twitter at @followthelead. Details will be in the show notes. Today's narrator is Sandra Espinosa. Sandra is a New York born and raised voice actress with a background in English literature and writing. After a childhood where video games were banned from the house, she'd 180'd so hard that she's finally in them and never leaving. Voiceover training in between jobs, fan projects she created for her favorite games soon gained recognition and led to her first paid role with Wadjet Eye Games. Some games Sandra's voiced for include The Primordia, Apotheon, Heroes of New Earth, Marvel's Avengers Academy, and most recently Brawl Stars by Clash of Clans developer Supercell. She also provides voiceover and editing services for countless lifestyle and education podcasts. When she's not voice acting, you can catch her on Twitter or Facebook under the handle Dusty Old Roses, obsessing over good food, good games, and the color pink. And now, get comfy in your seat. The fight's about to begin. Enjoy the story.
La Gorda and the City of Silver by Sabrina Borbulias. Narrated by Sandra Espinosa.
I was born on a Wednesday, in middle of a chaposón. The sudden squall of skywater bears little resemblance to a thunderstorm. It's more like a vertical flood, though very brief. I considered chaposón for my luchador name. I had poured out of my mother with the same fulminating relentlessness and washed her into the hereafter. But fate took a hand, and the name is still available for anyone who wants to design its mask and come up with some signature moves. Fate always takes a hand and leads us where she will. Fate is not funny, although she thinks she is as she laughs at us. When I meet her face to face, I intend to talk to her about it. Maybe I'll body slam her while I'm at it. But until then, I'm stuck with the name she set out for me when I packed on weight on my way to adolescence. La Gorda. The fat one. It's okay. I am fat, though not compared to the luchadores in my father's company. But they're men and are allowed to be corpulent. They're also allowed to be luchadores in the ring and on screen and in the cantina, where they swallow their tequilazos through the mouth holes of their masks because otherwise no one would recognize them and they'd have to pay. There is no ring for me, and no movies, because women are not luchadores. That's what El Patojo and El Superfly and El Diablo Colorado tell me when they come to my father's house for the Sunday tamalada. I make the tamales, of course. And after they've eaten their fill, my father gets out his camera and films another one of their episodic adventures right in our backyard. A week later, I see them up on screen, in the Pac Zone 7 movie palace some 5 blocks from our house. El Diablo Colorado is the villain, of course, since his name has the word devil in it. And his mask is red with flames, with a puckered horn let near each temple. He's the only luchador with a three-dimensional component to his mask, and he's very proud of this innovation.
People hate him and love him at the same time.
And when he's wrestling in the ring, they throw things at him. Bags of mango slices coated with flaked chile, packs of payaso cigarettes, reputedly made from the tobacco scavenged from discarded butts collected off the streets, and week-old lottery tickets with sad, unwinning numbers. When the night is over, I help clean up. We toss everything but the mango slices. We aren't rich, and the mangoes are good eating. Sometimes, if we're particularly tapped out, El Superfly keeps the payasos, too. El Superfly is the hero of my father's movies and Lucha Libre events, and El Patojo is his young sidekick. Nobody throws anything at them, though I think this will change now that El Patojo has turned from gangly to cut, and the girls have started squealing when he gets tagged in. I think someday there'll be underwear in the ring for me to clear away. They're all my godfathers, this company of good and evil, and I love them even without their masks. But they are not smart, and they do not know the first thing about women. The more they tell me no, the more I think, yes, and one of these days, La Gorda will show up in the ring and blow them all away. I already made her mask. Maybe when the builders named Ciudad de Plata, they intended the rich would be fooled and move into the neighborhood. Fate again, laughing.
City of Silver, the neighborhood in Zone 7, where the Guatemalan luchador movies get made,
is more or less lower middle class, and mostly a decent place to grow up. The houses have a patch of yard in front and back, and a concrete patio in between, with a rough lava rock pila where we scrub our clothes and hang them to dry. If you're up to your elbows in suds and look up from the pila across your patio, you'll see your neighbor's pila, and the pila in the lot beyond that, and so forth until the block comes to an end. This is where La Gorda first tags in. I'm wringing out sheets when I hear Elena crying. She is 6 and as skinny as I am fat. We've stopped playing together now that I'm 15, but that doesn't mean anything.
I'm still her friend, and I know the sobs aren't frivolous.
She didn't cry when her mother died of cancer 2 years ago. In fact, I don't believe I've ever seen tears glaze her dark eyes. I shake the soapy water off my arms and walk to the chicken wire fence that separates our houses. What happened?
I ask when I finally sight her up in the first big branches of a tree we call eucalipto, but may or may not bear any resemblance to a real eucalyptus tree.
It's like that here. We take the proper Spanish name for something and give it to something else altogether. And so we have melocotones, which aren't peaches as they are elsewhere in the Spanish-speaking world, but a type of squash. Elena shakes her head at me, doesn't answer, keeps sobbing. I stick my feet into the holes of the chicken wire and climb over. I'm so heavy I bend the fence. So much the better, less height to deal with. I go to stand under the tree where my friend is roosting.
If I could haul myself up to her, I would, but all my strength resides in my legs and midsection. My arms would better fit a skinny girl.
Come down, I call up.
No.
Why are you crying?
She shakes her head again, but I don't go away. A bad man, she says finally.
Did someone hurt you?
She nods.
What did he do to you?
I expect a slap, a knocking down,
a vicious arm pull, for these are the ways adults get angry and careless with children. What I get is an earful of 6-year-old words that, when properly strung together, amount to something much, much worse. Who? I ask. Describe him to me.
And if the demand comes out sounding harsh, it is because I know this is not the ring.
Where the villains are in truth nice guys who sell pork cutlets when their masks are off. No, like those words that are the same but really name vastly different objects. Villains outside the ring are evil, masked in ordinary. And the damage they do is often permanent. When she tells me, I convince her to climb over the chicken wire fence with me. Then I carefully bend the fencing back so it looks as it did before I bore my weight. I take her to my room and teach her how to set the lock. Then I take off my apron and go find my father and godfathers. They will do nothing because he is Elena's sole guardian. In their eyes, it's worse to leave a child alone in the world than to leave her in bad company. Perhaps there is some right in their thinking. Perhaps there is even heroism in the pact they make to distract the stepfather with nights out at the cantina and free tickets to the lucha events. After all, not a one of them has a quinto to spare, and it represents a commitment to monetary loss as well as time spent in the company of a man they can now do nothing but abhor.
Perhaps there is even a bit of creativity in their thinking. They discuss tailoring one of their movies to shame the man into desisting his predation, though El Diablo Colorado refuses to even pretend to be that kind of villain. Perhaps. But to me, their plans sound exactly like their no's to women luchadoras. Senseless. So I go back and write a note for Elena's stepfather, telling him she'll be staying with us the next couple of nights to help me with a project. Then I go home
and wait for night to fall. The mask is tight to my face, as all luchador masks are, and yellow like butter.
There are chocolate-colored spirals on each cheek, and on the back, where my tucked-in hair lumps at just the right spot, is an image of the pot-bellied gorda, a pre-Columbian find from an underground site that sits right on the edge of City of Silver. Since only the huge belly survives, there is a lot of argument about whether the stone idol was supposed to represent a fat man or a pregnant woman, but I know it's neither. There's a reason for the stylized ears of corn that fill the belly, and for the knotted strings that are carved where the belly button should be. I tie my apron in exactly the same configuration, and so does every woman and girl in City of Silver. We learned it from our mothers at the same time we learned to grill ears of corn in their husks and then turn them into the chuchitos and paches that so often fill our bellies. There is one thing all City of Silver residents agree on. The fat and ancient stone person found on our border is one of us. After I've gotten the mask just right, I bind my breasts with the ace bandages my father keeps around for when my godfathers hurt themselves during filming. Then I pull on the shiny, stretchy brown catsuit and super high-top yellow sneakers that complete La Gorda's outfit. I've been hiding the outfit since I made it, at the bottom of a chest full of women's things where my father will never think to go. At the last minute, I add a tablecloth. It has a cheery papaya popsicle print. As a cape and secure it with one of those hair elastics that has decorative plastic balls strung through it. When I look at myself in the full-length mirror, I see a luchador, a hero. There is a moment where I wish I could unbind and show what I really am. A luchadora, a heroine with a name handed down by fate and moves learned at my father's knee. But then I realize it doesn't matter. I'm behind the mask anyway. I climb over the chicken wire fence and employ El Diablo Colorado's skulking walk to carry me to the back door. It's locked, but I know where there's a spare key Elena uses to let herself in when she gets back from school. I open the door quietly, and although there is no light on, I find my way through the house without bumping into anything. All the houses on the block are identical. I stand a few moments at the threshold of the biggest bedroom. Elena's stepfather is sprawled on his back on the bed, snoring softly with his mouth open. The moonlight travels weakly through the sheer curtains and pulls around his body. He's dressed still, though the waistband of his pants are undone and his zipper's down. I consider returning to the kitchen and finding a knife to slice off what is behind the dingy white briefs that peek out. But that's not a move worthy of a luchador. So I calculate, as I've watched El Superfly calculate so many times in the ring. I land solidly on his chest. And to say that I drive the air from his lungs is to understate. I think I hear a rib crack under my massive knees. He tries to cough, then he tries to speak, but I tear my cape off and ball it into his mouth. He struggles to breathe. I borrow El Patojo's gravelly growl to issue my threat. After Elena's stepfather nods in agreement, I knock him into tomorrow with an illegal blow my father made me learn so I'd always recognize it. He won't let his luchadores get near any wrestlers who attempt to bring it into the ring. And I've had to flag him once or twice so he knows a particularly unscrupulous one has tried to slip it by our notice during a match. But this is no show ring, and there's no one around to ban La Gorda for nastiness. So I don't regret using it. Sometimes you just have to fight dirty. Legends have a date of birth. The legend of El Panzon is born the year Elena's stepfather goes on a bender he never comes back from, and El Diablo Colorado and his wife adopt the girl. Everyone gets the gender and the name of the new hero wrong, but no matter. As a luchador, he does one thing and one thing only. He makes City of Silver safe for women and girls. He's never been seen in the ring or even up on screen, but he has a local following anyway.
The itinerant street vendors sell ingenious mini-masks to slip over a thumb for thumb wrestling, and El Panzon's replica is every bit as popular as El Superfly's or El Diablo Colorado's. Only El Patojo sells more.
I buy a set of each for Elena and me, and when we play our thumb lucha libre, my godfathers gather around to cheer us and themselves on. I make sure La Gorda always wins. In my 21st year, I discover that the age difference between El Patojo and me has miraculously become insignificant. And after the first time he kisses me, I no longer think of him as my godfather. Women still throw their panties at him because he has, as I always hear them declare during the ring matches, a body by God. But under his mask, El Patojo's face is goofy and shy, and I couldn't love it any better. We marry, and although he won't wear his wedding ring at the same time as he wears his mask, it would hurt the box office. He comes home every night and revels in my generous body. Los Enanitos, our tag team of boys, are born. And then La Princesa. We teach them all the best wrestling moves. And when a girl finally has a role in one of my father's Lucha Libre movies, it's my 5-year-old Princesa. There is only sporadic need for La Gorda, and I successfully hide my identity from my husband. To him, I am just a woman in love with him, in love with food, in love with lucha. If he ever rolls over in bed, opens his eyes, and finds an empty space beside him, he is confident it'll only be a moment until the bed shifts under my weight again. These are the good years. Outside City of Silver, Guatemalan women and girls die in droves. They suffer gruesome deaths. The bodies, when they appear, are mutilated and disfigured. Just as El Panzón is known to safeguard his neighbors' women and girls, the new darkness that's taken over the rest of the city has only feminine targets. The people name him Cabracán, after the monstrous pre-Columbian deity responsible for earthquakes, and the mask they say is his has death written in every seam. Like El Panzón, Cabracán never enters the ring, but popular imagination pits them against each other, and wagers are made. I am at peak weight and in the prime of my life. I know Cabracán will not set foot in City of Silver. It's a sign of respect for a worthy opponent. My world is secure, but at its borders, the dark. I've watched the girls of City of Silver grow up and move to other neighborhoods in the city, places where I can't hear the scuttlebutt in order to come to their rescue. I've watched them leave and walk straight into Cabracán territory, and still I bide. Then it is our Elena who packs her suitcases and heads for an apartment in Zone 1. Her huge eyes land on mine moments before she boards the bus. "Take care of yourself, mi gordita," she says. It is just a term of affection in her mouth, something you might call an overweight sister or cousin, but it sends me to my father's house to stare across the fence at the eucalyptus tree where it all started. I'm there a long time before I feel a hand on my arm. "Don't do it, Gorda," El Patojo says. I turn to look into my husband's lumpy, beloved face. "I have to," I say after a moment. I can't stand the thought that someday it could be her broken under Cabracán's heel. "One neighborhood is enough responsibility for a luchador," he says. There is a long silence between us. "How long have you known?" I ask finally. "Always," he says. "From the first." In the middle of the night, I leave our bed to put on my mask and outfit. I don't know if my husband is awake or not, and I don't say any special goodbye. No luchador ever does. It's 7 blocks from my front door to the edge of City of Silver, and after that, it's up to fate. The sky tears. Water falls in sheets that blind and pummel. The earth bucks. Stones crack. Bolts strobe and turn the scenes unfolding beneath them into a movie. They say it is this way when the ancient powers walk the same streets. They say it is like this when El Panzón and Cabracán come face to face. They say there is no inch of Guatemala City that doesn't run with corn and rubble turned liquid like blood on this night. For a while, we are evenly matched. He has his moves. I have mine. We are of a height and of a weight. If it weren't for the masks and the colors of our outfits, you might not be able to tell one from the other. He jumps off parapets as if they were the ropes. I dodge and somersault. He propels himself vertical and aims his feet at my chest. I faint away and fall onto him when he's still prone. his elbow to my solar plexus, my knees to his chest. He draws up and away when one of his strikes loosens the binding on my breasts. "You are not El Panzón," he says. "There is no Panzón, just me, La Gorda," I answer. He spits, not at me, but about me. "Better," he says. "I'll break you exactly as I'd break any other woman." His attacks turn frenzied then, and after a volley that leaves me with ringing ears and limp arms, I turn myself toward City of Silver and run. I hear him laugh with delight as he gives chase. I know there is no safety left in my neighborhood. The respect that State Cabracan's hand at its borders is gone, and still it is where I head. I stumble and fall exactly where the stone idol of La Gorda was unearthed. He comes to stand over me, and in that moment, looking up at him, I notice that the seams of his mask form the outline of a skull. I hear a low growl as something flings itself at Cabracan's head. It is El Patojo, in full luchador regalia, and his foot connects with the skull's jaw. Then he's gone, and I hear the distinctive slap of a tag. I struggle to my feet as El Superfly sails at Cabracan. They tag in and out as if it were a movie that had been choreographed by a master. El Diablo Colorado, La Princesa, Los Ananitos, El Patojo again. He tags me, and then I'm in the ring with them, the team of my dreams and of my heart. The people of City of Silver have always had their heroes and their villains in the ring, but they know when the lucha turns real. They come to stand behind us and around us and with us. I hear their roar and feel the trajectory of the clots of clay with which they pelt Cabracan. We rout the killer of women. My father gets it on film. As the spectators make their way back to their homes, we luchadores and luchadoras limp around giving each other high fives. Then we put our arms around one another and make our way back to my father's house for a tequila and whatever food I can pull together on such short notice. There is never an end to evil, so we may have to fight again tomorrow or the day after, but that's okay. We're behind the masks anyway.
And welcome back. Sabrina had this to say about her story. When I was growing up in Guatemala, I spent many a Saturday watching Guatemalan filmmaker Rafael Lanuza shooting portions of his popular Lucha Libre movies in his backyard, which was next door to my grandmother's house. At the time, there were really no women in commercial Lucha Libre. That has changed since. Ciudad de Plata, City of Silver, the colonia where my grandmother lived, was also close to a significant pre-Columbian Maya archaeological site, Caminaljuyu, which, at the time I was growing up there, remained largely unexcavated. People from the colonia would walk around the mounds and even without intending to, would unearth shards and fragments of ancient figural pottery from the site, though not, to my knowledge, any figure resembling the pre-Columbian figurine in my story. The femicide aspect of the story is, unfortunately, a real-life issue which was often in the news, at least in the Guatemalan diaspora, in 2011, when this story was first written. Thank you for that, Sabrina. For myself, there was something of the universal here. When I was a kid, for 90% of the stuff I wanted to do, there was always one girl. Sometimes it was my job to fill that role. When I got older and started checking out other training halls, there'd always be one woman. She'd see me, register that I'm not 100% dude, and, relieved, we'd partner up to the extent that it was rank appropriate. Nowadays, every dojo, sal, and field I've stepped onto, there's been 3, 5, half, and some places, majority presence looked like me. If I get to be old and gray, surrounded by badasses with similar spirits and wildly different areas of expertise, I will know my life has been a rousing success. If you feel like you're the only one, you're not. It's an illusion. Something external is trying to keep you from your tribe, and you can't let it win. The more they tell you no, the louder you should think yes. Make the mask. Take the class. Do the thing and get out here. We need you, and we can't wait to meet you. As always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for taking us with you on your commute. Thank you for tweeting about us. Thank you for talking about us on Facebook. Thank you for hanging out on our forums, which we've had forever. And as we're getting into the process of updating our website and making sure that everything is available, I wanted to let you know about a couple of the goodies available to our subscribers on Patreon. Podcastle, along with our sister podcasts, Pseudopod, Cast of Wonders, and Escape Pod, have a Patreon. There's all kinds of premium content available, including the old Pseudopod autopsy reviews, this year's Halloween parade and answers, the Alphabet Quarter from Podcastle, as well as Camp Myth, Phoenix Hunting from Cast of Wonders. Each dollar goes toward paying our authors, narrators, and keeping the castle flying. And for those of you who are already our patrons, thank you so, so much. Also, if you have any thoughts on what you'd like to see in the premium content, please drop us a line on Twitter or contact us directly at editors@podcastle.org. If you'd like to know more, head to patreon.com/EAPodcasts. On behalf of all of us here at Podcastle, our co-editors Khalida Muhammad Ali and Jen Albert, our audio producer Peter Wood, our giant gaggle of associate editors, thank you again for letting us share a story with you. We've got to fly, but we'll be back next week. See you then. Oh, we have some news about the Hugo Awards this year. Here's Pseudopod's Alex Hofflich with details.
The Hugo Awards have these things they call nominations tallies, but they are commonly referred to as the long lists. These include the top 15 nominees and show who just missed making the finals. For example, Escape Pod, Podcastle, and Mothership Zeta all made the long list last year for Semi-Prozine. One of the great values of these long lists is that it allows readers even more excellent works to add to their to-read pile. David Steffen has worked to make mining those lists significantly more convenient for you. For the third year in a row, David has published a volume of the Long List Anthology. In this most recent version are included works from names familiar to fans of escape artists: Lavi Tidar, Ursula Vernon, Carolyn M. Yoakum, and Ken Liu, among a host of amazing others. Want to know what sort of story makes it to this anthology? Go listen to episode 607 of Escape Pod and catch Red and Tooth and Cog by Kat Rambo. Been procrastinating picking up Hammers on Bone by Cassandra Kaw or Runtime by Escape Pod's SB Divya? This anthology will assuage your guilt. You can find the Long List Anthology Volume 3 at all the usual purveyors of books. If you're already the proud owner of this book, become a subscribing supporter of Diabolical Plots, which is also edited by David Steffen. Subscribing there puts you in line early not only for the ebooks of the original stories published in Diabolical Plots, but also gets you in line early for the Long List Anthology Volume 4. Go support this fantastically creative human being by following the links in the show notes.
Our most cherished and long-felt desire. Let the might of your compassion arise to bring a quick end to the flowing stream of the blood and tears.